It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we want to deal with a couple of facets of marijuana and Iowa law that we'll focus on today. Later in the hour, we'll revisit the state's new medical cannabis law. It's barely a year old, just from last year. Specifically, there are people who want to change it now. Concerns that those with medical problems are having a hard time accessing this non-intoxicating cannabis oil for their medical problems. That towards a little bit into the program, perhaps the second half hour, the end of the first half hour, we'll get to that. But first, black people in Iowa are 8 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession than white people, despite comparable usage rates. In this first half hour, we want to talk with lawmakers about a bill being introduced in the Iowa Senate that would ease penalties for some cases of first-time marijuana possession. And joining us from the State House Law Library to do that, we have two Democratic senators. Senator Steve Saunders, he represents the District 36 and is chair of the Judiciary Committee. And Senator Kevin Kinney represents District 39. Senators Saunders and Kinney, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having us.
Also with us, Sarah Johnson at the State House Law Library, Justice System Analyst for the Iowa Department of Human Rights. We'll turn to you for some data in a few minutes. But first of all, let's talk about the change that you're suggesting in law enforcement for cannabis. Senator Saunders, would you go first and tell us about this bill?
Sure. First of all, I'd like to remind everyone, I'm a deputy sheriff and a former undercover drug officer for my area. But this bill that we're looking at, we're trying to do things a little smarter on crime. We're trying to figure out better ways to wisely use resources. So this bill is a bill that says possession of 5 grams or less of marijuana would be a simple misdemeanor. And could be a non-schedule violation, which means you could just get a ticket and go see a judge. Right now, it's a serious misdemeanor in current law, which in most cases you get arrested, taken to jail. You won't get out and can't just plead guilty. It's not a simple misdemeanor, so you have to get an attorney, and then there's a whole process that happens after that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for mentioning that, Senator Saunders. Also, Senator Kinney, you have law enforcement background. I neglected to mention you're retired as a lieutenant in the Investigations Division of the Johnson County Sheriff's Office, serving almost 30 years in law enforcement. So I apologize. That's important background to get in here. Senator Kinney, tell us more about this bill. Why change it? What motivates you to get behind this?
The reason I'm getting behind this is to save the court system money in the long run, to make it more efficient. We right now have a system where people are arrested for a serious misdemeanor possession charge. They are then taken to jail, and it is tying up our court system, and we're trying to make it the court system more efficient. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this would be fewer people going to jail, being put in prison for this.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. What about the racial disparities that I mentioned at the outset? What would it do there?
Ben, this is Senator Saunders, and we do believe that this will have impact on all minorities, and as you mentioned at the beginning, in Iowa, we're at about 3.3% population's black, and yet, at least in this one area, I think we're up to the 13% that are jailed on this offense. So, and Sarah could probably talk a little bit more about the stats on that, but that's just, again, I probably should stress, that's one piece of the overall what we're trying to accomplish by making the reduction from a serious to a simple. It is a better all the way around, not only for minorities and for regular folks, but it is a better way to do it from our judicial system.
Sarah Johnson, I want to get to you in just a moment, but we went back in our archive and drew some tape from Ben Stone, the former executive director of the ACLU, because one of the questions we had was, why would there be this disparity when there are comparable usage rates between blacks and whites in terms of using marijuana, but it turns out 8 times more blacks end up in our jails and prisons than whites do. And Ben Stone from June of 2013 with an explanation for this.
Well, I think that it's it really does reveal that it doesn't take overt, you know, nasty racism to make things happen like this. Disparity happens when people are treated differently, and it really doesn't matter if there's, you know, racist motives behind it. I think, you know, people can understand this a little bit when you just realize that, you know, think about, you know, two young people. One kid is a white kid arrested in the, you know, caught in the suburbs with pot, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, in their parents' car, you know, their nice car in the suburbs. And then a kid in the inner city who's an African-American kid who's caught on the street. The kids are often treated differently. You know, the kid out in the suburb may get sent home with mom and dad. You know, they've got a stable home life. They've got two parents at home. The kid in the city, you know, is likely going to go to juvenile. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to get hurt at school. And I think what we see is the school-to-prison pipeline. And what the ACLU really thinks is important that people start considering really seriously is that the war on drugs has become, you know, half of the people arrested in this country for drug violations are arrested for pot and pot possession. And there really needs to be a continuation of what we're seeing with this movement of people of Colorado and Washington. Let's consider legalization, because it is easier to get pot than it is to get alcohol if you're a young person. And the reason that is because alcohol is heavily regulated. And we need to find a way to get it, because the communities of color, African Americans in this country and in this state, have been devastated by the war on drugs. And we need to put an end to it.
Ben Stone, former executive director of the ACLU, you heard there, also dated the 2013 before there was any legalization in the United States of marijuana. Sarah Johnson, justice system analyst for the Iowa Department of Human Rights. Does that explanation square with the data that you deal with?
Well, generally what the data finds in regards to this bill, offenders currently who are sentenced to simple misdemeanor first marijuana possession, their sentence usually involves some type of community-based supervision. So we're not seeing a huge reduction in prison admissions. Where we're seeing the main reductions is in regards to jail admissions and probation admissions. Also, 14% of offenders who are convicted of first offense marijuana, serious misdemeanor, are African American.
Mm-hmm. So when you're saying these data, you're not seeing this. Are you forecasting this, or under the present system? Is that what you mean?
Under the present system, these are the effects.
Okay. Can you spin that out? Tell us, perhaps, what might be the effect of this new bill on the data, how it would change the various demographics there?
Sure. Well, we're not going to see a huge reduction in the prison population, because largely these offenders, like I said, aren't admitted to prison. However, we do see five fewer offenders in regards to jail admissions. We will see 156 fewer offenders admitted to jail annually, and 311 fewer offenders admitted to probation.
Would a simple way be, say, also that the more people in our jails and prisons would be there for harder drug charges? That would be an effect? Yeah.
Offenders sentenced to lesser penalties are not going to go to probation and jail at the rates that they currently are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sarah Johnson there of the Iowa Department of Human Rights. Note here, too, that in our discussion in this first half hour, in this show, in fact, on marijuana, we have no Republicans on today's show from our Iowa legislature, and it wasn't for lack of trying. After several days of trying, for instance, the press contact at the Iowa Senate GOP did not find anyone for us to speak with. The GOP House declined our invitation to provide a member to come on this show, which gets me to a question for you, Senators Kinney and Saunders. How much bipartisan support is there on lessening the penalties, changing the penalties from a serious to a simple misdemeanor?
Well, Ben, this is Senator Saunders, and we had some great bipartisan support on this bill. It came out of committee with bipartisan support. I worked, in fact, I set up a subcommittee that was equal, had three Republicans and three Democrats all signing off on the subcommittee report, passed through committee with bipartisan support. So I believe that when we get ready to bring this to the floor, I believe it'll also have bipartisan support in the Iowa Senate. And then some of the more work will have to happen in the Iowa House. And of course, I'm talking to folks over there now. But our first step is to get it off the Senate floor and over to the House. But felt very positive. I think what we found was both Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats understand that we got to have some proportionality to the penalties, and we have to look at trying to do things smarter. Does this save money? Can we do things in a little bit better way, get maybe some people some treatment if that's the case? So I think the discussion was very good on both sides.
Senator Sodders,
move this bill.
Yeah, Senator Sodders, what were the key elements? If you saw minds being changed, perhaps yours included, what were the key arguments that were making this change of mind?
Sure. So one of the key arguments was we did look at minority impact. We did look at how much cost savings this would be, particularly to locals. And again, being as I'm a full-time deputy sheriff, arresting somebody, take them into jail, all those costs that are associated with that, having a person have to get an attorney, they may not even get to see the inside of a courtroom, plead guilty or not guilty for 2-3 months. That's a cost on the system and to that person. So when we sort of laid everything out to both sides, we were just trying to find, is there a better way to do this? And I think on both sides, that was sort of one of the key things was cost savings and also proportionality. This is a low offense crime, low risk offenders. That was the other thing we looked at. Do we want to use our resources in Iowa to go after violent criminals, or do we want our resources to go after low risk offenders? And I think what we all came up with was we would rather, in money savings, we'd rather have those dollars going to violent criminals as opposed to low risk offenders who we might be able to work with and not have come back into the system.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with two Democratic senators about a bill being considered in the Iowa Senate that would ease penalties for some cases of first-time marijuana possession, change these cases from serious misdemeanors to simple misdemeanors. Senator Kinney, I have a note here that you were the only nay vote in the subcommittee. Is that correct?
That is correct. I was.
Uh-huh. And why was that? What were your concerns?
My concern was the enhanceable offense of the possession of marijuana, and I was unsure if the fingerprints and other things would be generated to produce the criminal history for the offense, so if that person was arrested a second time, that the fingerprints would be there and the criminal history would be generated. And then also for the people that were arrested, that how we are going to make it so if they're just signed out, that this would be done.
So did you get those concerns satisfied?
I did.
How?
Our staff then showed me the fingerprint section and sections 690.2, in which talks about fingerprinting and when fingerprinting is done, when a simple misdemeanor is an enhanceable offense, the fingerprints are taken after the conviction.
Right. So you're looking
what we're talking about is because marijuana is still an enhanceable offense. Fingerprints are still done.
Tell us what enhanceable is, because that might be a term that a lot of us are not familiar with.
This is Senator Kinney. The next time you would be arrested, it would be a serious misdemeanor, where it currently is at this time. And the next, if you're arrested under the new proposal, it would be a simple misdemeanor.
I see.
The next time would be a serious misdemeanor. So
enhanceable means that you can compound it. You can add it up.
Correct.
Okay. Go on with Senator Sodders. You had a point to make.
Well, I was just making the point that a little bit of the confusing part in Senator Kinney being at his first year, thought maybe we needed to have that language within the current bill, which I proposed, but we don't need that because it's already satisfied in another section. And once he and I were able to sit down and talk about that, He saw that, in fact, what he wanted was actually going to happen, that folks who go in, if they plead guilty to a simple misdemeanor possession, they're still required to come in and give a set of fingerprints because it's enhanceable, because the next charge would be a serious, and then if they get caught again, the next one would be an aggravated. So it bumps up the charges the more times you get caught for the same thing in this particular area.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to answer? Did others think of other perhaps unintended negative consequences of what you're trying to change here that had to be addressed?
You know, no, I think that was one of the bigger questions that came out of both the subcommittee and then the full committee action. And you know, this thing has been sitting on the calendar here for a while, and we're really not getting a whole lot of questions on whether this thing is going to turn something else out. I think most people feel pretty comfortable of what we're trying to do here with this bill.
Mm-hmm. What might be, in a positive way, impact on such legislation in terms of the costs that we spend on corrections, on our jails, our prisons, for locking up offenders? Did you look into that at all, either Senator?
Yeah, and part of that's what I think Sarah talked a little bit about. Again, when you currently... if I get you with a small amount under 5 grams of marijuana, you're going to go to jail. You're going to go to jail at that time.
Even if it's just a minuscule amount, perhaps, a scraping from a pot pipe.
Yes, that's still a possession under current law.
Okay. Any little bit is.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So a scraping up to 5 grams is still a serious misdemeanor currently. And you could go to, you're going to go to jail for that. It's a serious misdemeanor. Fingerprints, mugshot. You're going to stay in jail till you get to see a judge, which for most people is the next morning. The judge is not going to let you plead guilty because there could be jail time involved with this if you plead guilty to a serious. So they require you to get an attorney. Now, some people can afford an attorney. Some people can't afford an attorney, but that's another cost in the overall system. And then, like I said, it might be 2, 3, 4 months before they get a court date for this charge. Then they're put on some sort of either probation or parole. They're with a community base. All those things cost citizens money, property taxpayer money. And so can we do it in a better way is really what the avenue we were looking at. And even in Sarah's numbers, you can see the savings. This will save the judicial branch on a serious misdemeanor. It costs them about $213 to work on. And with a simple misdemeanor, it's about $28.
Okay.
And an indigent defense fund, for them to take care of somebody that's indigent on this current charge, serious, it's about $600 a person. By doing this as a simple, it's about $300 a person. So it's going to save quite a bit of money.
Any way to look at that when those sums are all totaled up, and an estimate of what the cost savings would be at all?
Hi, this is Sarah Johnson with the Division of Criminal and Juvenile Justice Planning. CJJP absolutely expects this bill to reduce correctional resources, but the Legislative Services Agency is responsible for determining how those reductions in correctional resources translate into cost saved. Mm.
So none of you have a dollar figure or a percentage figure that you could put out there?
Well, looking at some of what the LSA put out, Ben, they predict about half of the people, so there's a little over 1,000 people now a year that would fall underneath a serious misdemeanor possession. They believe it'll get cut in half by doing 5 grams and less. So, you know, if you took the total amount, it's going to, you know, you've got about half of those people that are not going to be at the same amount of money. I believe their impact was about, it'll save about $500,000.
Per year?
Annually.
Well, annually. $500,000 per year through this change. Let's have you address this, a tweet from one of our listeners. If you want to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or leave a message or a question on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. This is a tweet from Corey. He takes it a step further. Why don't we just decriminalize, legalize, and tax? Revenue from pot could be funds for roads and schools, etc. Colorado is proof that it works. Senator Sodders.
Yeah, well, I don't agree that everything in Colorado is working, first of all. California's got issues as well. Right now, we don't have, quite frankly, we wouldn't have the support, I think, on either side to completely legalize, make it recreational. So those things are not even on the table because I don't think we could get those things passed through either chamber. and to the governor, quite frankly. So when we try to look at, you know, what can we work on, what can we improve on, I think that's kind of where we're at with these bills.
Mm-hmm. You use the words right now. Do you see that in the future? Do you see attitudes changing? They certainly are in the country. Are they changing here in Iowa? Do you have your finger on that pulse?
Well, I think they've changed a little bit, especially I know in your second half you're going to be talking about the medical use, and I think that's changed. But I haven't found that, at least in my district, that recreational use, that's not a hot topic. I think people understand that it has some medical use, and I think they're fine with that. But I think going to recreational use has not really been a subject in my area that's been pushed forward.
Senator Kinney, what is your view on that? Is this something that's going to happen in the future? Do you think attitudes are changing at all?
I think that they're changing some, and I think a lot of it's got to do with the people talking about the medical marijuana, and that there is a real use for the medical marijuana. And I think that the views, it has opened up the dialogue, so people will talk about it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking to the other states, Colorado and Washington, to see, in terms of taxing and legalizing and taxing, how things are working? I imagine as lawmakers, you must be studying those cases and will be in the coming years.
Sure. We're going to be looking at everything. I mean, if the problem, I think, is that we don't know exactly how all those are going to play out. For instance, Colorado, how many more medical use issues are they going to have for more people using? Do you have more car wrecks because more people are driving high? Do you have, I mean, we won't have any of those kind of numbers, at least initially, and we'll continue to look at those things. But, you know, marijuana is still a drug that can be abused, and so we've got to be very careful with this. Just like we have other drugs out there that are scheduled for a certain reason, we don't let people snort cocaine because it's some medical use, and so we've got to be very careful with this. And those are abused drugs as well. So it's about doing the smart.
Okay, Senator Sodders, we have just a few seconds. Sorry to cut you off, but I just want a quick word on the likelihood of this bill passing and being signed by the governor.
Well, great. Well, that is yet to be seen, I suppose. I think it'll pass the Iowa Senate. I don't think we'll have very many people voting no on it in the Iowa Senate. Part of my work will be then going to the Iowa House and talking to my friends over there. And hopefully it goes to the governor and he sees the same thing we see.
All right. Very good. Thank you for joining us. Senator Sodders, I understand you'll stay with us for the second half hour. Thank you, Sarah Johnson and Senator Kevin Kinney, for joining us this half hour. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll pick up the medical marijuana side of this discussion. We had a medical marijuana law passed last year. We'll get an update after this short break. Great to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're looking at marijuana and Iowa law, a couple of aspects of it. In the first half hour, we talked a little bit about law enforcement of cannabis and how there is a bill in the Senate to change small amounts, possession of small amounts of marijuana from a serious misdemeanor to a simple misdemeanor. This half hour, we want to revisit the state's new medical cannabis law from last year, not even a year old. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, there are more than 20 states that allow medical marijuana use. Iowa is among about a dozen states that approved limited medical marijuana laws in 2014 that in many cases allow the use of cannabis oil. This half hour, we'll look at specific concerns with the law that presently exists, namely that people with medical problems that might be helped by cannabis oil have a hard time accessing this non-intoxicating oil. And joining us, we have Senator Steve Sodders, Democratic senator from our first half hour at the State House Law Library. I want to mention he's deputy sheriff in Marshall County. Senator Sodders, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me again.
Also with us, his colleague in the Democratic Party in the Senate, Joe Bolcom, from District 43, Assistant Majority Leader. Senator Bolcom, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon, Ben.
I want to mention again this half hour that we did, of course, reach out to the Republicans in the Senate to be part of this conversation. We After several days of trying with the press contact at the Senate GOP, we could not have them provide anybody. They couldn't come up with anybody to be on this show. But we're glad to have Senator Sodders and Bolcom talk about this. Remind us, Senator Bolcom, what Iowa's new cannabis oil law provides for.
Well, Ben, the legislature made important progress and an important first step last session when we passed in a bipartisan way a bill to allow legal access to cannabidiol, medical cannabis oil, for patients with intractable epilepsy. And the bill was signed in May by the governor. But unfortunately, at this point, not a single patient has been helped. I understand that we've had about 13 people apply for a medical cannabis card, and apparently 8 have been issued. But what we still lack is the ability for these patients to get access to the medicine itself. So like a lot of things here in the General Assembly, we pass a law that doesn't maybe do everything we want, and that's kind of where we are with this. It's a law that needs some more work.
So with the right doctor's approval, you can get your card, but you can't. It's not being produced in the state legally, and you cannot go to another state and bring it back to Iowa.
Well, the law we passed made no provision for the production of the medicine here in Iowa. It essentially just gave somebody legal immunity, if you will, when they traveled to another state, got the medicine, and then got home. We wouldn't arrest them, take their child or their property. And what we've learned since we passed the law is that virtually every other state requires that you be a resident of that state, have a relationship with a doctor in that state. And by the way, you're not allowed to take the medicine out of that state. So in the case of, say, Illinois or Colorado or Michigan, you could go there, but you'd have to lie to the officials in those states in order to basically get approval to get the medicine. And then, of course, you have to break federal laws to cross state boundaries to come home. So we essentially passed a law that required our Iowa residents to break laws in other states and other federal laws. And the solution to this is...
Well, just a minute, but going back to that time, didn't you foresee this? You passed what is, can only be called a flawed law that doesn't result in a functional system and doesn't help anybody who you said was in need, who testified they were in need.
Yeah, well, I think that the legislature responded as best it could to the moms and dads and the patients that we heard from last year. There were 11 other states, as you noted at the intro, that passed essentially the same law we did that did not provide for the production of the medicine within the borders of those other 11 states. So I think we were naive thinking you could go to another state and get the medicine and get it home here. We were incorrect, and we have work to do to fix this law so that the people that are suffering from these chronic conditions can get the medicine they desperately need.
I want you to outline your proposed changes, but first I want to remind our listeners that we'd like to have you join our conversation. We have until shortly before the top of the hour talking about medical marijuana. Are you someone concerned with the use of medical marijuana in our state? What are your thoughts about the new medical marijuana law, the changes that Senator Bolcom and his colleague are proposing, and the suggestion that it should be somehow expanded to increase accessibility to the oil for medical use? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook. We have several personal stories to come as well, so we want to squeeze in a lot in this half hour. But Senator Bolcom, tell us, what changes are you going to propose? And this is not a bill yet, I understand.
Well, I think, Ben, we need to develop a thoughtful, restricted program that allows chronically ill patients with certain conditions and with a doctor certification access to safe, legal medicine. And as Iowa passed its law last year, Minnesota also passed a brand new law that they're currently implementing. And the big pieces of what I think you're going to see proposed in the next week or so here is we're going to add a number of conditions that if a doctor certifies you have those conditions, you'd be able to have access to medical cannabis. And when we look at Minnesota, they allow for cancer, multiple sclerosis, AIDS, HIV, glaucoma, Crohn's disease, and as their main list of conditions. So we want to propose a list that helps more than just people with intractable epilepsy. The bill would, like Minnesota has done, have a process to select somebody, a company in this case, to basically produce and dispense the medicine. They allowed for two growers and eight dispensaries in Minnesota. Illinois, by contrast, has a system where they have 22 cultivators, they call them in Illinois, and 60 dispensers across the state of Illinois. So we have to cross that threshold to actually produce and dispense the medicine. It would also allow establish a medical advisory board of medical professionals, pharmacists that would oversee the program, would take petitions for people that might want to add different or additional conditions. One of the conditions that's going to be proposed in the bill here in Iowa is the condition of PTSD, for example. About a dozen states allow access to medical cannabis for PTSD. When we have about 30% of the Iraq-Afghanistan war vets coming back with PTSD, that might be something for the legislature to consider. So that's kind of a very quick outline. More conditions, more chronic conditions that people suffer from, the ability to produce and dispense the medicine within our borders, and then a real strong medical oversight over the program.
We heard a little bit of this from you in our news at the bottom of the hour, but comment on this again, if you could. Governor Branstad making the comment that perhaps Iowa can work with Illinois officials where it can be produced to purchase cannabis oil there for the treatment of severe epilepsy. But what do you make of that? And he did call it speculation, the governor did.
Well, we have people today in Iowa suffering and in some cases actually dying from these chronic conditions, and they really deserve our support and help, not false hope or really wildly inaccurate statements from Governor Branstad. He needs to do his homework. This is an issue that's been around now for a good 2 years, and he occasionally says things that have no basis in fact. And a lot of people thought, well, geez, maybe that's a solution for us here in Iowa.
How do you say there's no basis in fact? You've checked it out?
When I read it, I knew it wasn't accurate. I had a really good conversation with the lead sponsor last week, Representative Lou Lang, and you have to be a resident of Illinois. And in Illinois, their law says you can't take the medicine out of the state. And so they would actually have to amend their law, which there's no chance they're planning to do that, according to Representative Lang. And the other thing I'd say is, why in the world would the governor send Iowans to another state to get the medical care they need? I mean, can't we figure this out here in Iowa? We're smart enough to do this and do it in a responsible way.
Wouldn't a federal law, supposing you could acquire it there, federal law would prohibit you, not any state law, federal law, prohibit you from bringing it, say, from Rock Island back over the Mississippi, right?
That's another consideration and another law we'd be having Iowans break.
Okay. Let's get to some of these personal stories. Lori Tassin is with us, a Des Moines resident. She's also with you, I believe, in the law library. Hello, Lori.
Hi.
Thank you for coming in today. Tell us about your condition.
Well, in September 2010, I was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. I was non-smoker, not around secondhand smoke. I have been on 4 cytotoxins, which is your chemo. I have been on 3 targeted therapies. I have had 4 different rounds of radiation. And most recently, three weeks ago, I had a tumor removed from my brain. So we did some research on last summer when I found out I had 5 brain metastases that cannabis could be a really good option. And I guess I want to also back up and say my husband is also a cancer survivor 13 months after my diagnosis. He was diagnosed with brain cancer. His has been resected and he is 3 years in remission. But when we started doing our homework on cannabis as a medicine, we had found that that was another treatment option that both he and I could potentially use in the future. So
you're saying you've done your research and you maintain there is scientific evidence for your condition that does it help with the pain or the actual slowing the growth of tumors or what does it do?
Both. It we found that THC is supposed to kill cancer cells and CBD is supposed to not allow it to metastasize, as well as anti-inflammatory, anti-nausea, appetite stimulant. There's many, many benefits that we could use from this medicine.
So what is it you want from law, Iowa law, and changes?
I would like to see the bill expanded, and for, I don't want it recreational, I want it for medicinal purposes only, because there is facts that it does provide medicinal properties. And so I would like to see it expanded to allow other chronic conditions, as well as I would like to see it here in Iowa. I live in Des Moines, so why would I want to go travel 3 to 4 hours to go get medicine? I have other things that I need to be considering when I am looking at this, and I don't want to spend that much time on the road when I've got 4 kids and there's other things that I need to be worried about besides traveling 3 to 4 hours to go get medicine.
Okay, Lori Tassin, thank you for giving us your story. And
thank you.
Let's go to Brandon Brazy. He's a Webster City resident joining us by phone. Hello, Brandon.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. You're also someone very concerned about medical marijuana, its access here in Iowa. Tell us about the condition you have.
Well, in 2009, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. It's an inflammatory disease, an autoimmune disease. I have it throughout my entire digestive tract. I've been on every single FDA-approved medication for my disease. I'm currently waiting on the last FDA-approved medication to get run through my insurance company, which has been 3 weeks ago today, actually. I'm still waiting to hear back from them. Every single medication I've been on has had terrible side effects. Liver damage could cause cancer, serious brain infection. You name it, I've had to deal with it. I've had to sign off, you know, saying that fighting this disease is more important than any of those things. I've had surgeries done, numerous surgeries, one up at Mayo where they removed some of my intestines. I had a colostomy bag put on, and it was sewn back up after that. It healed, obviously, but currently I was in the hospital last week, actually, for a small bowel obstruction because the inflammation had gotten so bad, and I'm not currently taking any medication.
So let's cut to cannabis oil. What evidence is there that cannabis oil could help you with your condition, Crohn's disease?
Cannabis oil works with the body to control the inflammation. Studies overseas and have shown that it can put my disease into remission. 70% chance of that happening, which is higher percentage with cannabis oil than my last 2 medications approved by the FDA. The chances are greater of it being put into remission.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brandon Brazy. So Joe Bolcom, these are the type of people that you've been hearing from for years.
Yes, it is. I mean, I've heard just the most heartbreaking stories from a whole host of Iowans from all walks of life, all ages, that have taken the most powerful, most advanced medicines we've developed for a whole host of conditions, have gotten the best doctoring available, and they're at wit's end. They would like to try cannabis to treat conditions that have not been effectively met through other means. And I'm not sure what the state's interest is at this point in preventing our citizens from having access to this. I think we can do this in a controlled, restricted way, like the other states that are moving ahead on this, and do it in a way that works for these patients and addresses the concerns of people that have concerns.
Senator Sodders, let's get you in on this. Do you feel there's support not only among Democrats, but some Republicans to get this through both houses of the legislature?
Well, I do. I think at the end of the day, if we do as Joe suggested, is having a very tight bill that does go to it, this being of a medical aspect, I think you'll find that you'll have both Republicans and Democrats supporting it. I think you see that out in the public. This isn't a Democrat or Republican issue, really. I've heard from both sides, quite frankly, in my district, people with MS, people with cancer. I have a brother with Crohn's disease, so we've been hearing this from a lot of different folks, and it seems to me that we have this opportunity not only to get medicines that folks need to them, but how do we improve upon it? I mean, most places can't even do the research because of such restrictive laws at the federal level. in a lot of the states. So this to me is another avenue where another state comes on board and says to the federal government, hey, you gotta make this Schedule II controlled substance so that our universities and other folks can actually do the research and we can know better, you know, what are the doses, what do we really need to give each of these patients and those type of things. And we're not quite there yet, but we should.
Okay. Let's get one other personal story in here. Rachel is with us calling from Colorado. Rachel, are you there?
Yeah.
Rachel, you've been on Iowa Public Radio before, and I think you've testified at the legislature as well. You're a native Iowan. Your family used to live in the state. You have a very young daughter, about two, 3 years old?
She's 2.5.
2.5, and her condition is?
She has intractable epilepsy.
Mm-hmm. And you've been wanting to and have been treating her with cannabis oil. You're in Colorado now.
Correct. So we've been out here since November of 2013. So it's been about 14, 15 months now that she's been on the oil. In the process, at one point, she was down at least 80% in her seizures. The last couple months, we've hit a little bump in the road, but that's not surprising with her condition. We don't have answers for her condition. We don't have really any specific diagnosis aside from the uncontrolled seizures, but growing can, a growth spurt can cause more seizure activity. So right now we're kind of in a bump in the road. Over the course of the past year, she's also been weaned off of all of her pharmaceuticals. She was on 3 different pharmaceuticals, and we've just seen her flourish, and she's just come out of her shell with expression, being able to be a little more aware of her surroundings. I really feel like she's expressing stuff to us. The problem is with a nonverbal child is the understanding what she's trying to express. But the beauty of us being out here in Colorado right now is we've hit this bump in the road, and we have the opportunity to explore a little more than just the extremely low THC. So we've actually found that a little bit more THC benefits Maggie, and there's different strains. There's different that we've just scratched the surface of what the possibilities are for trying to better manage her seizures.
So the THC is the intoxicant, is what makes you high in cannabis. That's correct, Rachel?
What you would consider a psychoactive part of the plant, but the drugs that are used for seizures are psychoactive. The point is to alter the brain activity. And so I know that THC is so scary for many people, or their concern is, but you're not getting your daughter high. When she was on all her pharmaceuticals, she was much higher than she has ever been on the cannabis.
Rachel, we wish your daughter, we're running out of time, we wish you and your daughter well. Your daughter, Maggie, glad to hear that she's doing better these days. I want to go to Joe Bolcom and Steve Sodders here. What about that? Will medical marijuana, the cannabis oil, have varying degrees of THC in here? Rachel seems to indicate that some THC, more than initially, is helping her daughter more.
Well, this is Senator Bolcom. I think that we would anticipate, like the 23 other states that have moved ahead, that the whole plant essentially would be available to treat all the different conditions that that people thought made sense in terms of getting different conditions approved. THC actually, for people that aren't, say they're getting treated for cancer and they're taking drugs that don't allow them to eat and takes away their appetite, THC is actually quite effective in stimulating appetite, for example. And there's other components of the plant, I think, that benefit people that have different conditions. So I think we want to have access to the full spectrum of the cannabinoids that are available in the plant, and make sure that we have people that know what they're doing, dispensing the medicine.
We have less than a minute left. Senator Bolcom, perhaps you could sum it up quickly. Tell us, you will be introducing this bill when? The end of the week? Next week?
I hope that by the end of this week, there'll be a bill introduced in the Iowa Senate, essentially to create a program modeled after both Illinois and Minnesota. We're trying to take the best things at work, and hopefully we'll have some bipartisan support to move that along here.
How optimistic are you that you're going to gain some legislators' change of minds and the governor, importantly?
Well, I really encourage people that are listening to this program to contact their state representative and their state senator. We each have one of both, and share your view on it. I mean, legislators come over here to do what people back home want them to do, and it's time for people that would like to see progress on this get more active.
Senator Joe Bolcom with us, also Senator Steve Saunders. Thank you for coming into the State House Law Library to participate in this conversation this hour.
Thank you, Ben.
And, of course, Lori Tassin, we wish you the best, as well as wishing the best to Brandon Brazy as well. Thank you for your personal stories. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. John Pemble helped us out in Des Moines today. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, I think, on the docket, we're going to be talking about commercial drones. I hope you'll stay tuned or tune in for that tomorrow. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.